From Cheyenne to Cody, from Gillette to Rock Springs, this is Let's Talk Wyoming, your weekly double dose of Wyoming politics. Because politics may be complicated, but we're here to break it down and help you make sense of it all. I'm Amy Edmonds, a former legislator from Cheyenne. Thanks for being here. Hey friends, welcome back. This is Let's Talk Wyoming. How are y'all doing? It's been a beautiful early April here in Cheyenne. Of course, winter always has to raise its ugly head back a little bit, but looking forward to warmer weather in the next week or so. Hope you all are well. I thought today we would talk about just a couple of things, two in particular. There's a story we should probably discuss about yet another, as the Cowboy State Daily headline said, squabble between Secretary of State Chuck Gray and Governor Mark Gordon. And it should be clear that the squabble was clearly coming mainly from the Chuck Gray side at the recent State Lands and Investment Board meeting. So apparently what happened was the board was discussing a vote on two wind farm projects, looking to get green-lighted at the SLIP board. And Gray took a very sharp opposing side to these two projects in Converse and Niobrara County. So the projects, I believe, were going to lease some state lands, although I think there was some public land, or excuse me, some private land components to the projects. I believe they're fairly large. Gray was the only no vote in the meeting, but he took ample opportunity, and I went and watched some of it. I didn't get through it all. I cannot get through all of the grandstanding that Secretary of State Chuck Gray does. It is the worst possible kind of performative politics, and it is so incredibly tiresome and counterproductive. It's hard to get through. I'm just gonna be honest with you folks. I did not watch the entire thing, because I think I have better things to do with my life than waste it watching him in particular. He is just so thirsty, politically thirsty for his own political ends, that he goes into these tirades. And probably the best part of the whole thing was when he devolved from even the matter at hand, which was the discussion of these wind farms that they were talking about and the vote ahead of them, into this whole tangent about being a victim of the medium and just going, you know, the media, which is just preposterous. Gordon cut him off, and I think, you know, said sanctimonious. He was being sanctimonious, and that's just so funny. I had to fast forward to watch that part because I'd seen news reports about it. But ultimately the projects were both voted up. Like I said, Secretary of State Chuck Gray was the only one who voted no. Everyone else, the treasurer, the auditor, the superintendent of public instruction, and the governor, all voted yes for it. Those projects will move forward. While the secretary can make, you know, some interesting arguments, of course, about the subsidies for wind farms, there is such an understanding of, you know, the economic freedom that people have to finance projects, go on to public and private land, private landowners having the right to say, I want this project on my land, that the government just shouldn't be in there saying yes or no to. The secretary tried to make that argument. Really, what he was doing was grandstanding. Let's be really obvious. So I thought it might be just a good opportunity to kind of talk a little bit about this kind of performative politics, right? Performative politics is usually characterized by like really dramatic displays and rhetoric aimed primarily at getting attention rather than having any kind of like substantive policy discussion that leads to achieving a substantive, you know, policy outcome. And it's detrimental to the health of our our republic. It really, truly is. And I think it's worth having this conversation today about, because I just found the whole sordid affair of his behavior, of Secretary of State's behavior at the SLIP board, worthy of a really good, robust conversation about performative politics and why it's so bad. And from a conservative perspective, why, you know, upstanding conservatives should not and will not engage in this kind of performative behavior. You know, performative politics prioritizes, I can get my words out today, really, you know, making a spectacle of yourself over substance. It's dividing to our country, to our electorate. It can erode trust in institutions, right? Because there's nothing you won't throw under the bus to make a spectacle of yourself. And at the heart of it, what it really does is it undermines the whole problem-solving effort that our elected officials have to engage in. And, you know, they engage in this problem-solving in public places, publicly, in meetings, in committee meetings, you know, the legislature on the floor or in a committee meeting. And when one person is engaged solely in their own, you know, performative politics for their own end, it erodes that ability to really problem solve, because that's not the intention of performative politics. And I really think that voters need to recognize this, you know, this corrosive trend. I mean, because it's so bad in the country right now, and we really need to support leaders committed to what I think is what I consider authentic statesmanship and a kind of principled governance that is the hallmark of conservative principles. But it's the hallmark of most principles of good leaders, whether they're conservative or not. Authentic statesmanship, principled governance. This is what we should be looking for in our leaders, not the garbage that we see the Secretary of State engaging in with his performative politics, where he's reading off of, you know, a document that he's obviously been pre-prepared to get a headline, which he got. I mean, he got a whole news story. I learned about it because I read the story. Historically, conservative leadership has often and usually kind of exemplified a kind of dignity you see, you know, in leaders like Ronald Reagan, the Bushes, Eisenhower, Margaret Thatcher. So many of them had a commitment to like the public good over their own popularity. And engaged in that, made hard choices. They had a sense of duty to the nation, and it really transcended the kind of personal gain that folks like Chuck Gray have. Like, all he cares about, I mean, it's just so clear. I've said it again and again on this podcast. He has been running for a different office than the office he holds since the minute he got elected. The minute he won a statewide office, that he's been running for something else. I think it's for governor, but it could be something else. That's, you know, it's so corrosive to our country, to our state, and it's so bad. Ronald Reagan was really, really revered for his eloquence and his principled conservatism. He is, for me, I am a Reagan conservative. And I've read almost every speech the man has ever gave. I've read multiple books on Reagan. I've, of course, watched him. I grew up with him. And I really love Reagan. I think he is the gold standard. And he famously stated, the greatest leader is not necessarily the one who does the greatest things. He's the one that gets the people to do the greatest things. And I loved that. And I thought it was such a great contrast to have in this conversation, because if you go and watch the Secretary of State, everything he did was about himself. Everything he did was not about calling people to a higher order, to a better set of principles, to behave or do better, but it was all eyes, all focus on him. Look at me. Look at me. I'm the only real conservative in the room. Look, I'm the one who cares. I'm the one who has all the right ideas. And Reagan, again, the greatest leader is not necessarily the one who does the greatest things. He is the one that gets the people to do the greatest things. In other words, all eyes not on him. I mean, Reagan's the one who I think really called the nation to that city on a hill, right? That beacon. He's the one who called the free world into fighting and overcoming communism and saying that this, you know, the man wants freedom more than anything. And these people locked behind this iron curtain want freedom. And he's always everything that, you know, he's done has always stirred the hearts and minds of people. That's what great statesmanship looks like. And it is devoid in our politics right now. I mean, pretty much devoid in our politics. Other leaders, even like, you know, Eisenhower exemplified a conservative statesman. He had a kind of, you know, quiet strength that I've admired and have liked. The Bushes, H.W. Bush, had a commitment to service. You know, he talked about, you know, advocating for a kinder, gentler nation rather than, I think, succumbing to what we finally succumbed to, which is this populism and performative outrage. I think leaders that emphasize our responsibilities, ourselves, on being responsible citizens, on being, you know, decent, competent people, that's the kind of leaders we should be looking for. That's the kind of leader you should be looking for as a voter. Look for people that call you to a higher standard as well and emphasize that. And people who have lived that kind of life, who've been married to the same woman or man for however long, who've had led a steady and decent life. These are principles that we should want over these folks who have, you know, so many problems themselves and also who are just performative. Today's politicians, they just thrive on divisiveness, on outrage, you know, getting that media headline like Chuck Grace, you know, searching and finding, you know, the hit thing to say to get all that stuff. And this shift toward this has really, you know, serious consequences that I think we've seen. The kind of, you know, the legislative gridlock, the decreased bipartisan cooperation, growing public disenchantment. I think people are less and less trustworthy of their country, of their state. Performative politics is bad. It replaces the debate we need to see, which is substantive debate. I mean, you know, my coverage through this last legislative session, I think one of the things that I talked about several times was how devoid of any substantive debate we saw on the House side, that the Freedom Caucus folks hardly ever spoke, and when they did, it was not very deep. I mean, they were caught up several times, not even understanding bills or knowing what to say, because they are part of a system of empty gestures. And that is something that we should reject as a state. It's very bad for us. We should be electing people who can engage in, who first of all can understand the complexity of a subject and can engage in debate, substantive debate, around it. That's the kind of governance that values, you know, outcomes. And instead, what we have are governance that values appearance and performance. And it's really bad for us. You know, the founders of our country envisioned politicians as, you know, virtuous statesmen, people who are committed, again, to this idea of the common good, public service, a kind of, you know, an integrity above personal ambition and partisan loyalty. As a matter of fact, you know, if you read the founders, you really get the sense of how much they detested this idea of party and party loyalty, partisan loyalty. They really understood the importance of a moral leadership and an informed discussion and principled governance. Washington, in his farewell address, he even warned against the dangers of partisan divide and political self-interest. He really emphasize the sense of unity and the preservation of institutions over everything else. And remember, his farewell address, the fact that he delivered a farewell address was so profoundly significant. He was the first president. And, you know, the king in England even said what an incredible man he was for laying down that power, right? That power that he was willing to give up his own personal ambition and lay it down. It's such an important thing. It is the hallmark of our country, this willingness to adhere to the Constitution, to adhere to the will of the people, and to serve the time that you're given, and then to step down. Madison, of course, you know, one of the founders, or one of the writers of the Constitution, articulated the necessity of leaders who are committed to checks and balances, you know, to that accountability piece. In Federalist 51, he argues like one of my favorite quotes, he argues that if men were angels, no government would be necessary, right? Recognizing that humans are fallible, that we're sinful people, and that is they needed to design, and they did design a system intended to curb the excesses of political ambition and to preserve liberty through institutional accountability. The only way you preserve liberty is to curb political ambition, because what will kill liberty is, dictatorships, people who think they should be in power forever, performative politics that doesn't care about the rights of the people they're voting for, that wants to, again, stir up, you know, anger and divisiveness. And so that we forget that we're all Americans, right? If you are following people who have helped you to tap into the worst of your inclinations and have helped you to lose the sense of we're all Americans, that we're all in this country together, and that we collectively care about our country, you're following the wrong politicians. You should not be voting for them. You should not support them. Turn them off. If you're listening to talk radio or people who are helping you to lose the sense of kindness and decency, stop listening. Because really today, the distance between the founders' visions and our realities of where politics are right now is pretty stark. I mean, we could not be further away from the understanding of, you know, getting away from political self-interest and partisan divide. We could not be further away from that. Our politicians frequently prioritize personal fame. I mean, we see it all the time, party dominance. We see it even here in Wyoming with the fight with the state GOP. Short-term victories over any kind of lasting benefit. And this has come to Wyoming, and it's really, really damaging. Chuck Gray is the poster child in many ways for this. I mean, his performative stuff is so bad. All the ways he's driven this, you know, sort of anger toward county clerks and saying that they're somehow, you know, bad. You know, he tries to walk this line about how there's all this incredible election fraud, and yet he never, you know, he doesn't quite go so far, because he knows how dangerous it might be for him to say the clerks are bad, because we all know our clerks and we know that that's not the case. We've all voted. We've all been there. And again, as I keep saying again and again, if the elections were bad, then why is he? Was he duly elected? I don't know. Maybe he wasn't. Anyway, really, performative politics contributes to dysfunction in our government. It contributes to polarizing us against one another. And it contributes to us being disenchanted with all of the processes and institutions that are so important to us. It raises the level of anger and hatred to a place where it'll tear down things that should not be torn down, right? Was it Chesterton? There was a discussion a couple of days ago about Chesterton's fence, this idea that Chesterton had that, you know, don't come to me and say that you want to tear this thing down until you can show me that you know every reason why it was put there in the first place. Right, that's that idea that don't come and say you want to do this radical thing. You want to rip some institution apart. You want to, you know, let me use a national example. You want to impeach judges. Don't do that until you can tell me that you understand exactly why all of these things were in place in the first place and what they mean and do. And that is it's Chesterton. So that is a very conservative principle, right? Because as a conservative, you are conserving the legacy order. So what you are doing, that's what conservatism means. It isn't this quixotic, rapid response that the populism that has just choked the life out of conservatism in the Republican Party right now does. There's no conserving with these folks. It's tear it down, burn it down, you know, rip it apart, throw it away. You know, we're going to save everybody by destroying stuff. And I really think that to restore the founders' vision, there's, you know, a couple of things need to be pursued. We really need to, first of all, reinvigorate civic education, really help voters better understand the principles, the founders' principles, make them understand and distinguish between genuine statesmanship and self-serving rhetoric. just hone that in and make more and more people understand what you're hearing when you watch Chuck Gray throw a temper tantrum at a slipboard is self-serving rhetoric. It is not statesmanship. Help them to see that. I also think we need to do political reforms, more transparency, right? More accountability in laws. I mean, I've been saying this about the Freedom Caucus, the fact that these folks can have legislators on the House side as members, but that can be kept secret is outrageous. That's utterly outrageous. Voters deserve transparency, more transparency. This helps to, you know, reduce corruption. And I think we need to have it. I also think we need to continue to emphasize the kind of, you know, leadership, service-oriented leadership that we want in our candidates, people who demonstrate integrity, who understand the importance of public trust and service to the public. I think those things are so incredibly important, and they're so closely aligned with the original intentions of our founders. And I think we have to get back to that. It takes a lot of work. We all have to engage in this work. We have to be talking to our neighbors, to our friends, the people who we know are voters. We need to talk to folks who maybe don't vote and encourage them and show them how to vote and talk to them about how to get away from, you know, this kind of polarization and how to get back to genuine statesmanship versus self-serving rhetoric. And every time we see self-serving rhetoric, every time we see it, we need to point it out. That's just self-serving. That's just rhetoric for their behalf. They just want to run for office, or they just want to go to a higher office, or whatever it may be. But I think by reclaiming these principles, we can better align with the founders' ideals and really ensure our country gets back to a more functional place that's, you know, healthy and good for us, and healthy and good for you know, future generations of Americans and future generations of Wyomingites. And here in Wyoming, I think part of it is going to be this immediate, we need to start identifying the rhetoric, when it's self-serving, when it's partisan, when it's based solely on, you know, people's political ambitions, and call it out and point out who the statesmen are, who's up there arguing for principles and arguing for the important, you know, factors of the public good for all of us. Who's doing that? That's the discussion I wanted to have around the article that I saw, and then what I watched on the slipboard, which there's, you know, I'm sure lots of examples, and I could give many examples on that. Lastly, and I'll be brief, but lastly, I just wanted to touch on, I don't know about you, but I spent Sunday or Saturday watching the celebration of life, both myself and my husband watching the celebration of life of Wyoming's U.S. Senator Al Simpson, who passed away recently over in Laramie. The celebration was over in Laramie. And I thought this would actually kind of tie in a way, these two would tie in, this idea of statesmanship. I mean, like him, love him, not like him, however you may have felt politically about Al Simpson, I don't think anyone can watch, you know, the Wyoming PBS stories about his life and could have watched that celebration of life that happened in Laramie and not, you know, really get a sense of what a giant of a man he was, what a, you know, what a really interesting dynamic leader and statesman that he was. Senator Simpson and I probably didn't share all of the same political views. We certainly didn't in some areas, but I just was transfixed with the wonderful stories that I heard from folks like, you know, former Governor Matt Mead and current U.S. Senator Cynthia Lummis. There's just a lot of really delightful stories. Al Simpson was, I guess, as some people would say, a character. He was a character. So I just wanted to kind of talk a little bit about Senator Simpson. He, of course, was renowned for his wit and his, you know, service to Wyoming in Washington, D.C. And certainly, whether you liked or not, he's known well for his bipartisan approach. He cared deeply about this state, and he also cared deeply about our country. His history, his family's history, if you haven't gone to Wyoming PBS, you can probably pull up fairly quickly I think it was a two-part program done on the Simpson family, going, you know, all the way back to the first ones that came. And it's a really great little snippet of history about Wyoming too, because they're so, the two are so embedded, the family and the country and the state. He grew up in Cody, Wyoming, of course. He went to the University of Wyoming. He played sports. Of course, he was incredibly tall. I think, 6'5" or 6'7". I forget what they said. But he went to school in Laramie. He graduated in 1954. He served in the U.S. Army. He came back and became a lawyer at the university and went on to serve in the Wyoming House of Representatives, and held the roles of Majority Whip, Majority Floor Leader, and Speaker Pro Tem. Now, I, of course, served with his son, Colin, who went further than his father in the House, Wyoming House of Representatives, and served as Speaker of the House. So Colin was my second speaker when I served in the legislature. So then his father went on to the United States Senate in 1978 and served in various capacities. And, you know, he was just, the stories are great. Of course, you've probably all seen one of his most famous quotes: if you have integrity, nothing else matters. If you don't have integrity, nothing else matters. It's a great one. I mean, it's just one that, you know, I have one, not from Al, but from his brother Pete, that I have never forgotten. And I have said, I can't think how many times I have repeated this to other people and to new lawmakers and to folks, because it just, at the time it struck me, and it's so important. And then after I had served in the legislature, it really struck me of how incredibly important it was. But his brother Pete came to Cheyenne, to the Capitol, when I was a freshman lawmaker for my freshman orientation, before you actually are sworn in and you start serving. And you're all in the chamber with it. And it was a large class. My freshman class was a big class, 20 some people. And Pete Simpson said, he told a story, and I can't remember the story exactly, but then he went on to kind of give the sum up of it. And the sum up was that when you come into the Wyoming legislature, if you don't know who you are, this is a hell of a place to find out. And that could not be more true. And it has stuck with me for so many years. I think it's, you know, a great example of both Pete and his brother Al, of their deep understanding of politics and the political process. It's a great, you know, it's a great thing to say. But I also think, you know, Al Simpson's, if you have integrity, nothing else matters. If you don't have integrity, nothing else matters, as also being so incredibly true. It was repeated at his celebration in Laramie. Another great one that I have loved and used, not as frequently, but those who travel the high road of humility are not troubled by heavy traffic. That's a great one. I can tell you that in terms of humility in our current political system, there is zero traffic. there's zero traffic. I think we all know that. Al was probably for the folks listening to this that might be younger, probably the thing you know him the most for is the Simpson-Bowles Commission that was put together to really look at addressing the nation's fiscal issues, something that unfortunately the U.S. Congress did not act upon. There's a lot of, I think, fairly good stuff in there, and certainly the same fiscal problems that they saw in 2010 have been, you know, quadrupled since there and still not addressed. But I think Al Simpson's life and the stories that, you know, you can go and watch if you watch the celebration really show a time gone by that we need to get back to, of people who serve as statesmen, whether they serve as more moderate lawmakers or more conservative. It isn't the principle of their politics that matters. It's the fact that they were statesmen. And I think that's the point. So a lot of people will be dismissive of what I say about Al Simpson and say, well, he was a moderate, what do I care? It has nothing to do with his political stances. It has to do with his statesmanship as a politician, how he approached the things he did, not what he did or did not believe. He was a great statesman, and I think we should get back to that. I mean, he had a great thing to say about politics. He was quoted as saying, you know, politics today, it's just sharp elbows. And instead of having a caucus where you sit down and say, what are you going to do for your country? You sit around figuring out how to screw the other side. I loved that. I thought, boy, isn't that exactly where we're at? I wanted to end today with just a couple of things that folks said about Alison's and that I thought was lovely. And then I'll end with the story that Senator Cynthia Lummis gave at the Celebration of Life that just made me howl with laughter. So Senator Simpson's brother Pete said he was an uncommonly generous man, and I mean generous in an absolutely unconditional way, giving of his time, giving of his energy. He did it in politics, and he did it in the family forever. Former President George W. Bush called Simpson one of the finest public servants ever to have graced our nation's capital. My family will remember him best not for his many accomplishments, but for his loyal friendship and sharp sense of humor, President Bush said in a statement. Simpson is well known for a quip my husband tends to give a lot. So, you know, here in the Edmonds household, we have used several Simpson statements and will continue to do so, which should give you just a sense of what a person that he was and how important he was. Harlan has always loved Al Simpson's quote, "We have two political parties in this country, the stupid party and the evil party. I belong to the stupid party." I can't tell you how many times my husband has said that. And he says it with great joy and glee because he believes it to be very true. So again, I served with his son, Colin. Colin said about his father that his father was gifted in crossing party lines and building political consensus. He said that Dad and Pete have anchored the extended Simpson family for decades with the same love, humor, compassion, and dedication their parents did before them. Dad was a mighty force and was Mom's steady hand by his side. We are so blessed and proud to have been along for the ride of a lifetime, unquote. Just, you know, lovely. And my heart goes out to the Simpson family for that loss. I wanted to, end with... I wanted to end with this funny story that Senator Lummis gave. She said that she was invited to a lovely brunch at a very expensive, very, you know, posh home in Washington, D.C. that Al and his wife attended as well. And she was there in the house when they arrived. And when they came in, Al says to his wife, gestures over the mantle and says to his wife, "Well, looky there, there's an original pissaroo." And his wife, who seems like a very lovely woman, says, "Now, Al, you know that that's an original pissaro." I got such a kick out of that story. Sorry if you maybe don't get as much of a kick out of it. I just thought it's just such a Wyoming foible to rename, you know, this famous artist Pissarro was Pissarro. So I just thought it was lovely. But so I'll just end there. Again, the sentiment for me, and I hope for so many others, is that we get back to statesmen and we get away from the kind of self-aggrandizing performative politics that we saw earlier this week used by our Secretary of State. And I hope more and more of us continue to point out when we see this and reject it. So hope you all have a wonderful weekend here in Wyoming. We're going to be seeing some gorgeous weather soon. I hope we all have it. Until next time, everyone, take care.